You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us as three lifelong 007 fans go on a journey of discovery.
We're on a mission to discover everything we can about cinema's greatest spy films.
By learning about the people who made them, in front of the camera and behind.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is in no way affiliated with James Bond, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We've researched each episode as extensively as we can, but our information does come from a range of sources. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we can get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us at podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the James Bond A to Z podcast. We are still in the letter B, and this episode is a special. Again, this time, Blofeld. B is for Blofeld, Ernst Stavro Blofeld. I guess you could say he is the Moriarty to Bond's Sherlock Holmes. Is that fair?
Yes, you could say that, yeah.
Yeah,
to an extent.
But I guess he's the bad guy, you know, when you think of James Bond, or at least a casual observer when he thinks of James Bond, he thinks of Blofeld, right, as the adversary.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, and probably more so a specific Blofeld than any others. But yeah, he's definitely the kind of archetypal Bond villain, which is what you see from the fact that it's copied so much in parodies and things like that. And it's pretty much always, you know, the same Blofeld in each one.
The grey suit, the bald head.
And that's what's made Blofeld have the standing in the Bond world that it does. Probably more so the fact that he has been sort of homaged so much.
Yeah, and I think, and it also it speaks as well to the time when in the series that Blofeld came around in the film series, and the fans had kind of already existed for a while. So Blofeld kind of, I think, hits that sweet spot where Bond is concerned, where, you know, he came at the time where Bond really hit its stride, and he's the villain that most people remember.
He's sort of the Thanos, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'd suggest we don't veer towards Marvel references in the podcast, because cheapens it slightly. But yes, he kind of is. And if you know, the world had been different and the legal side of things had been different, he may have been in it significantly more and been a consistent villain like Moriarty. But yeah, he's still the big one, isn't he? He's the only real repeat offender that's with of that stature.
It would have been interesting to see a Roger Moore Blofeld for the whole tenure. What they've done with that, you know.
It would have been interesting, but...
Not saying it'd be good.
I can't quite see a Blofeld that would work for Roger. It'd have to be a very specific type of Blofeld, wouldn't it?
Well, it was meant to be Stromberg, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. So we'll come to that in a bit.
Yeah, okay.
So talking about the films then, Blofeld appears in From Russia With Love, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Diamonds Are Forever, sort of in For Your Eyes Only, Never Say Never Again, and then later Spectre and No Time to Die. So he's, you know, you're right, he is the most recurring villain of the piece, but interestingly only ever played by the same actor twice, Christoph Waltz.
None of us have seen No Time to Die yet, but that's set to be quite a small part as well, isn't it? So it's definitely a kind of a one-shot role a lot of the time.
Yeah, I guess he was played by the same people in From Russia with in Thunderball, but it was very much a small part, right? So let's get straight into it then and talk about, you know, where Blofeld came from. So Blofeld was first introduced to the whole world, to the entire world, in Fleming's 1961 James Bond novel Thunderball, and in that he is the head of Spectre. So weirdly for Blofeld, his origins lie in the films, which hadn't even began at that point. Obviously 61 is a year before Dr. No is released, but his origins lie within the film. So Ian Fleming had always wanted to have his books made into films or serials, because he just knew that there was more money to be made in selling the rights than in you know, the sales of the books. So 5 months before the release of Casino Royale, he purchased a company called Glidrose Productions. I don't know if you know this, but it's a small theatrical agency, and this then served as the corporate vehicle for Fleming to you know, sell the licenses, the copyright of his books, and for the reason that it would save him a lot of money in tax. So he had this separate company that did that, and so there was a lot of interest in, after the release of Casino Royale, there was a lot of interest from various people in terms of turning the books into films and TV series. And we'll cover all this in much more depth when we get to F for Fleming, I guess. There's the important thing is that at one stage, Fleming has a deal on the table with CBS, the TV network, to turn his books into a TV series. And so Fleming worked on the outlines for the episodes of that program. There was going to be 32 episodes. And so he worked out a load of plots for those. And so then in 1959, Fleming wrote these books, turned a lot of these treatments into Bond short stories. And this is where From a View to a Kill, Risiko, Quantum of Solace, Hildebrand Rarity were then turned into the anthology book called For Your Eyes Only. And so that's where that all sort of came about. And so that was sort of in his mind, you know, I can turn these stories for TV series into my books, because I think he'd sort of, you know, he was getting to a point where he was running out of ideas for the books. So it was at this point that Fleming teamed up with someone called Ivor Bryce. And Ivor Bryce looms large in the Fleming story. Again, we'll speak about more then, because he helped Fleming to buy Goldeneye, his resort, his home in Jamaica. Anyway, they had a mutual friend. I know it's a bit of a roundabout way of getting to this, called Ernie Cuneo. And then he suggested that they should make a film, when they were coming up with ideas for a film, about gangsters who steal an atomic bomb and hold the world to ransom. And it's at this stage that Ivor Bryce hires Irish filmmaker Kevin McClory to work on a film. And again, we'll speak a lot more about McClory when we come to the letter M. Don't want to do too much detail in there. But basically, McClory then set to work on coming up with an idea for a film. And he really wanted to set the film in the Bahamas, where he just recently shot a film. And he thought there was a lot that could be done underwater. They then hired a writer called Jack Whittingham, but he then left to do work on something else. And so McClory worked on it a bit more. And then using Cuneo's idea, they all came up together with this idea of Blofeld. And so the script went from there. It was for this film called Longitude 78 West. So that this was all percolating, and in the background, this was an idea for a film, and that's where Blofeld first comes in. And so then Fleming then took all those ideas and turned them into Thunderball, which he published in 1961. And this is where everything starts to fall apart, because McClory took Fleming to High Court in London for the breach of copyright in 1963, and this was settled. And after Eon starts producing the Bond films, they make a deal with McClory, who the agreement was that he would produce Thunderball, and then he couldn't make a version of the novel for 10 years after the release of the Eon produced version in 65. Right. So that's where the genesis of him comes from. There is obviously a lot of speculation about where the name comes from. some people say that he took the name Blofeld from Tom Blofeld, who was a farmer and chairman of the Country Gentlemen's Association and a member of a club that Fleming was a member at, a London club. But he'd also been at Eton with Fleming as well. And for cricket fans, Tom Blofeld is the father of Henry Blofeld, the cricket commentator. So there's that link there. And then there's also suggestions that, I don't know if you've read this before, but Fleming based Blofeld on a real-life Greek arms dealer called Basil Zaharoff. Have you heard this name? Has this name come up in your research?
Yeah.
It's cropped up.
Yeah, and so obviously Ernst Stavro being a Greek name, you can sort of see the connection there. Now, this guy is worthy of a podcast in himself from reading about him. Described as the merchant of death and a mystery man of Europe, known to his friends as ZZ. So you can it just says Bond villain all over. And I think we'll actually return to him when we get to the letter Z, because there's not many more in the Bond canon under the letter Z. But so I think we'll leave him there. But definitely, like, if you want to learn more about Basil Zaharoff, have a look into it. It's a fascinating story, but it's never been confirmed that it's definitely based on him. But that's it, basically. That he then gets introduced in Thunderball, and yeah, I guess Brendan, you've been looking into the biography.
Yeah, I have. I'm going to do it separately. There's two sort of timelines as we move forward into the more recent Bond film, so we'll cover the early Blofeld's biography. Yeah, so the background of Blofeld is detailed in Thunderball, like you said, and this sort of information isn't covered in the films, so this is the only sort of taste of his backstory that we get, and it's from the books. His birth date is May 28, 1908, which is actually in Fleming's birth date as well, so they share that, to a Polish father and a Greek mother in, and I think it's Dinia? It's got a G on it, maybe. That sounds like it might be right.
I'll do.
If it's not, I apologise. He attended the University of Warsaw, where he studied economics and political history. So you can see Ian Fleming's like building quite a nice, rich backstory for Blofeld. Yeah, really.
He likes his characterisation, doesn't he? Mm. He's doing the job on Blofeld.
Yeah, definitely. So then he goes to Warsaw Technical Institute and he studies engineering and radionics. Then he takes a communication position within the Polish government at the Ministry of Posts and Telegraphs, and he uses that position to gain inside trading and buying and stocks knowledge on the stock exchange for Warsaw. Apparently he has the foresight to see World War II and makes copies of secret, like different secrets the Nazis required. So he sells it to Nazi Germany. And then before the German invasion, 1939, he destroys all the records of his own existence. So he's covering himself, where he then moves to Turkey and he works for Turkish radio, and he sets up an intelligence organization. So during the war, he's selling information to both sides. He's just in it for himself.
Classic Blofeld,
yes. Then after the defeat of Rommel, he decides to back the Allied war effort. So he's actually then awarded medals by the Allied powers. And then after the war, he moves to South America and founds Spectre. So that's up to the point where he creates Spectre, and then obviously that's where it all kicks off and he creates this rich network of evil within the
ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. So he first appears in From Russia With Love, credited.
This is the films just, now, isn't it?
This is into the films, yeah.
Yeah.
He first appears in From Russia With Love. He's only credited as Ernst Blofeld. And then in Thunderball as well. So in these both of those appearances in the films, you don't see his face. And yet again, that's another iconic thing, isn't it? That's really strikes with that stroking of the white cat, which is a very iconic visualisation of that.
Ripped then it off Inspector Gadget, I think. is that yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's spot on.
And then you've got his third, fourth and fifth appearances. You Only Live Twice, Honor Majesties and Diamonds Are Forever. He's the main guy that Bond is up against, and they meet face to face, whereas previously they hadn't, which we'll go on to cover as we go through each actor that's played him. And then during the open sequence, again we'll cover this, Diamonds Are Forever, it reveals that he's undergone plastic surgery, and that plays a large part in the storyline of how Blofeld tries to dupe Bond.
And that has origins in the books, right? Because in the books, he appears in three books and he has a different appearance in each time because he's undergone...
Yeah. So this matches Fleming's in the books, his portrayal, who will go to any length to preserve that anonymity, including the use of plastic surgery. So yeah, that the origins there have come from the books. And then there's a sixth appearance, which again we'll go into more detail, but he's only credited as bald-headed man with white cat, and that is to do with that legal dispute that you touched on with Kevin McClory. So yeah, that's just a brief overlay of the biography of Blofeld, and then I'm sure we're going to explore it now as we go delve deeper. Yes. Yes.
Plenty to talk about. So, as you've mentioned, he first appears in From Russia With Love, and he's played by an actor, Anthony Dawson, who you'll also know as being Professor Dent in Dr. No. Very good character in Dr. Nave, quite an important character, which is, I suppose it speaks quite a lot to how these films were made in the early days, where you did reuse actors and it wasn't really an issue at all of kind of moving around in different films. So I didn't really know a lot about Anthony Dawson. I knew he was in Dial M for Murder, and he's brilliant in Dial M for Murder. But his history of films that he's worked on, and the reason why he's got involved in Bond or has been used so much, is that he's worked with Terence Young quite a few times. So that's where he's kind of got involved with the series. But you find this quite a lot with the early Bond films. There's always constant links between people who are in other films and all that kind of stuff. He was in a film called They Were Not Divided, which was directed by Terence Young, but also starred Christopher Lee and Desmond Llewellyn. And he starred in a lot of films with Desmond Llewellyn. I've got a list down here somewhere. I think it's like five films he's been in with Desmond Llewellyn.
Interesting.
Pretty nice gig to have. Getting in a lot of films with Desmond Llewellyn. Wouldn't mind seeing a few of those. He's also done things like... He was in four episodes of Danger Man. Are you aware of Danger Man?
No.
It's actor Patrick McGoohan.
Prisoner.
Who was in The Prisoner. Yeah. It's quite a good series. But I don't remember him in it. But he tends to get these roles where he plays villainous, creepy guys. And he's very good at them. Hence why he's got involved with playing Blofeld. So in From Russia With Love and Thunderball... As we mentioned, you don't actually see him playing the role of Blofeld. You only see the back of his head and his hands as they stroke a cat. And he's not credited either for that role in either of those films. Interestingly, a little side here, note I've got on here. I think we've spoken about it before, maybe not on the podcast actually, maybe this will come up, but there's a film called OK Connery, or Operation Kid Brother, which stars Sean Connery's little brother. He's in that. With Lois Maxwell and Bernard Lee and everyone. So I'm not sure how pleased he was being involved in that. Yeah, so in the From Russia With Love and in Thunderball, his appearance, even though you don't really see a lot of him, his appearance is actually quite different from how it appears in You Only Live Twice. So in those two films, he actually wears like a suit. He's just kind of wearing a smart suit. And he's got hair. He's got black hair. It's actual hair. Whereas obviously as soon as you go to You Only Live Twice, he suddenly starts wearing this strange... it's actually... called a Nehru jacket.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Or Mao suit. That's what you kind of see Donald Pleasance wearing. So there's quite a big shift in when they got to You Only Live Twice. They really did think about the character. I don't think they probably put a lot of thought into how he looked and everything. He was just a faceless character that existed in the background. So yeah, he's not actually playing the voice either. So he's not really that... To class him as an actor in it is quite a loose term, because really all he is a silhouette... stroking a cat, which is a pretty good job to have if you can get it. I don't know how much you got paid for doing that. Interestingly, in From Russia With Love, they're discussing a plan to avenge the death of their member, Dr. No, which of course he starred in. So there's an interesting link to that, where he's actually talking about the previous film. Yeah, and that's it really. He's not really... I don't know. There's not a lot of information around, you know, him doing that role, but obviously it's not so much a memorable role. But it's, you know, it's definitely an important feature within those films, and in many ways probably a high point for Blofeld, because that kind of faceless boss that you don't ever see is actually quite a nice way of doing him.
It's such a great mystique. It gives him such a mystery to him. I think there are some people probably me included, who see that as the best incarnation, right? The sort of shadowy figure behind the desk. And
me too.
Yeah. And I do as well. And a lot of people, and we'll go through do this in a bit, but nobody ever had any problems with Blofeld in those two films. He's a great character. Whereas as soon as you get into the fact that, you know, he starts actually becoming a main character, that's when people started having problems, because it didn't quite fit with what people thought he was going to be. But yeah, really interesting start to a character you never actually see. But yeah, that's
so it's yeah, it's
Anthony Dawson.
It's not very clear why they got Eric Pullman to do the voice of Blofeld in those films. I guess Anthony Dawson was Scottish, and they wanted someone with a European or sort of faintly foreign accent, and so they got Eric Pullman there. So I'll just tell you a little bit about him very quickly. He's German and born in 1913, and he worked mainly in the UK. He was a classically trained actor, born in Vienna, and he trained to be an actor there. And in 1939, he followed his fiance and then later his wife, a lady called Lieselotte Göttinger, and she was Jewish, and so obviously she fled Germany at that stage, and they came to the UK in exile. Interestingly, when they were here, he took part in some propaganda broadcasts against the Nazis on the BBC World Service. So quite an interesting character from that sense. And they both took temporary positions in the household of the Duke of Bedford. So his partner Lieselotte worked as a cook, and Eric was a butler. So quite an interesting story there. After the war, he then began his career on the London stage. And because of obviously being a foreign actor, or at least a European actor, he got a lot of roles in TV and film, often in crime films, sometimes in comedies. And he would always be sort of typecast as master criminals, spies, that sort of thing, authority figures. He's got loads of credits to his name, actually, some really interesting ones. He played King George II in Disney's Rob Roy, the Highland Rogue. Not seen that one. Mm-hmm. He's also in The Third Man. He's in a bunch of other films, including some US films and comedies such as Gentlemen Marry Brunettes. And then he was also in The Belle of St. Trinians, Carry On Spying, and The Return of the Pink Panther. So
yes, he actually plays a character just called Fat Man in those. I checked that up.
The Fat Man, yeah. So then, 1963, he appears as the voice of Blofeld in From Russia with Love, and 65 in Thunderball. He actually became much more famous after that. Got a lot of success in German TV in an adaptation of a novel called The Woman in White, and apparently it's one of the most successful German TV shows ever, and it still has quite a cult following over there. Apparently, I've not heard of it before, but. Yeah, he also became quite regular on British TV, starred in a TV series called The Colonel March of Scotland Yard in the 1950s. That was with Boris Karloff. And then also appeared in a lot of TV series, including, you'll like this, The Saint, The Avengers, Danger Man.
Oh, that lot.
Jason King, all those sorts of things. And he died in 1979, aged 66. He has never spoken about Bond. There's no explanation as to why he was chosen, how he ended up there, as far as I could find. So he's more of a footnote in the Blofeld story, but he gives, you know, that character some, yeah.
It's a great voice, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I just, imagining that scene, I just know that voice instantly off the top of my head. It's such an important voice, and I think we'll talk about this later, but a similar format of that voice happens later on in the Daniel Craig era. And I remember seeing it and thinking it just didn't have the kind of impetus, the power that earlier one had. And I think that, as I was saying earlier, that they picked him and not Anthony Dawson to do the voice. His voice doesn't suit Anthony Dawson's body in that scene, and I think that's why it works. It sounds like the voice of a big man, doesn't it, who's loud and probably quite... Well, he plays a fat guy in films. He's probably quite a big man. So that it adds a certain sense of kind of sinister quality to it when you mix those that voice with that body. But really important.
And then he goes larger than life in You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, so obviously they've only showed so far Stroking the Cat, booming voice. What are people going to want to see? Apparently, according to the producers and screenwriters, they want to see a face-to-face meet with Bond. So that's what they go ahead with. You know, they've had great success with those early Bond films, and then they decide that they need to show him on screen. He is the head of the, you know, head of Spectre. So let's see the two characters meet up.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Well, eventually, yeah. After two films, though, maybe they could have dragged that up a bit more. Mm. Yeah, they asked numerous people, to like character actors, to play this role, who were unavailable or were working on other projects at the time. And Harry Saltzman had the idea to ask a renowned comedic Czech actor called, and again, I apologise for pronunciation, but I think it's Jan Verix.
Sounds about right.
That's what I'm going for. and he accepted the role. And then he met the director, Lewis Gilbert, in Cubby Broccoli's office. And he was greeted with this kind Father Christmas-style figure who had struggles with the English language. And instantly he's thinking, I've got doubts. I don't know about this. Because what we've seen so far, it didn't match. They gave him the benefit of the doubt. And they started shooting. And it only took 5 days for them to realise that this isn't going to work. He's not right for the part. And so he was fired. So, and no one knows. They blamed it on him being ill. That was a good get out. Yeah. No one knows how many scenes were filmed with Verix's Blofeld. There are some photos on the internet, so you can see him in character. He's got the cat, and he's in.
He looks like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, but he doesn't look menacing at all. But maybe had they have stuck with it, that could have been quite an interesting juxtaposition. Who knows? There's no actual footage of the scenes. They obviously exist because in the film where Bond first meets him, from behind you see him stroking the cat. You can see the top of Verix's hair. Just before Donald Pleasance's face is revealed. So look out for that, because that is in there. A little, just a nugget of trivia about Jan Verix. He's got a planet named after him.
Ooh, that's good.
Minor planet 2418 Voskovec Verix was discovered by Lubos Kohutek, and it's named after Jan Verix and George Voskovec.
Yeah, don't worry about the Blofeld role, mate. You've got a planet.
Yeah, you've got a planet, exactly. So, yeah, he was sacked and then handed it over to Donald Pleasance.
Yes, so Donald Pleasance. But, yeah, it's good point that you mentioned that a lot of his scenes are... He is still in the film in certain bits. And apparently a lot of the scenes where Sean Connery is speaking to Blofeld, he's actually looking... He's not looking at Donald Pleasance. He's looking at Jan. And the reactions are the reactions he's got to Jan and not the ones that he's got to Donald Pleasance. So they still kept a lot of the actual scenes in from some angle, but obviously not with him actually in it. Yeah. So Donald Pleasance is a funny one, because I was thinking about this earlier, and when I think of Blofeld, I do think of Donald Pleasance, and I think that's what most people do. And for some reason in my head, I always just assume that he was in more than the other ones because he's so much more important.
Yeah.
But he's not in more than the other ones. He's exactly the same as the other ones. And in the whole of You Only Live Twice, he's only really in it for like 10 minutes and cumulatively. And that was one of there's a lot of kind of reviewers and responses come when people saw the film saying that he just didn't have enough screen time throughout the whole film. I don't necessarily agree with that. But it's interesting that he's held that role so powerfully against other people, when really, I mean, Telly Savalas is in it. The whole film's about Telly Savalas, really. He's constantly in it. He's always like in scenes. Whereas, who knows? Maybe it's just because of the kind of like simple way that he looks, and people just remember that. And Austin Powers is
the scar
even more
as well. Yeah,
the scar. Yeah, just having something simple,
probably to do with the fact that Telly Savalas was in On Her Majesty's Secret Service as well, which isn't a Connery.
He's not a very... I mean, Butler will say how much he loves On Her Majesty's Secret Service and Telly Savalas in that film, but he's not memorable. The people who aren't really into Bond probably don't remember that film very well, because it's very similar, a lot of the scenes and everything. And he's not the most eye-catching person, is he, in comparison to a massive scar on Donald Pleasance. But anyway, some interesting facts about Donald. This is a good one for you, Butler, and for me. He was born in Worksop, Nottinghamshire, but he was actually brought up in a small village called Grimaldby in Lincolnshire.
Ah.
And he went to school in Scunthorpe.
Very good.
We might have to go for a road trip there.
Lincolnshire lad.
To check out where he lived. He's got quite an interesting career, really. I didn't go too in depth with what his life has been like, but he was kind of a stage actor. He was... that. before the war happened, Second World War, he was a stage actor, and then he objected to being in the war. So it wasn't until quite late on in the war that he actually did get involved and he joined the RAF. He got captured and he was a prisoner of war in Germany, and he used to put on plays for the other prisoners while he was there, and then obviously carried on acting as he came out. He's got an enormous filmography. He's been in so much stuff. He kind of created a role for himself in this kind of weird, evil, Nazi-style baddie. And he did it in a lot of films, especially in his early days. He was in The Great Escape, obviously, probably his most famous role outside of Blofeld. And he was also in THX-1138, which I didn't know.
George Lucas film.
So obviously, he's a short man. He's got a bald head. He's got kind of a weird stare. He's quite... If you're going to hire him to do something, chances are it's going to be a baddie or somebody who's... He's not going to be the hero, is he? Probably most important role he's played that kind of epitomises that is he played Heinrich Himmler in The Eagle Has Landed. Very well, also. he was in Escape from New York in 1981. He was a priest in Prince of Darkness. And then he was in all of the Halloween films. And he was actually Goody in all of the Halloween films. He was one of the heroes. Yes, I don't think I've ever actively watched the Halloween films. I think it's been on in a room, but I've never been into it. But I do remember him.
Yeah, I think calling him in the Goody is, he's a bit more nuanced than that, because he sort of he's trying to help Michael to, like, he's giving him therapy in the first film, and then he's trying to sort of, you know, turn him from evil. So it's kind of a mixed sort of. He's not so good, not so bad, but it's a great character, Loomis. Brilliant.
Well, I think if you just typed in him to YouTube and just asked for clips, you'd just see so many films that you go, oh, he's in that. Oh, he's in that as well. He's in that. He's always just kind of like one of those actors that's, it's just in so much stuff, not as a main character, but just constantly in it. Because if you want a person that fulfills that role, he's your guy, really. There's only a few other guys that kind of
Great character actor.
Yeah. So yeah, he was, and then eventually after, obviously, the role of Blofeld didn't work out when it came to Jan Werrick. He kind of got involved and immediately did a good job. He was quite heavily involved in the, you know, the outfits and the characterization of Blofeld. And he kind of made a few suggestions of how he wanted to do it and how he wanted to look. There was talk of there being a hump, a limp, a beard and a lame hand. Finally, they settled on a scar, which he said he found uncomfortable because there's a lot of glue attached to his
eye. It looks painful when you look at it.
Yeah. It's a pretty intense scar, isn't it? A lot of the makeup to put on. Yeah, so he pulled that role together really well. And yeah, they said when they got him involved that because he'd never been seen on screen, that he had to have a big scar or something because he had to shock the audience when they first saw Blofeld. He couldn't just be a normal looking man with black hair who just walks out from a chair. He had to have something quite noticeable about him that people would look at and go, wow, that's strange, that's eye-catching. So that was a key decision that was made. He did say that he gets some great lines in the film. He's almost like, he's quite a camp baddie in many ways, and he gets a lot of silly lines and almost pantomime lines in the film. One of them is, if I'm going to be forced to watch television, may I smoke? That's Bond. Yes, it won't be the nicotine that kills you, Mr. Bond. Little pithy lines that he gets that not really necessary for a baddie to do. And he definitely doesn't pull them off in the same way that somebody like Goldfinger does, where it's kind of like mano a mano. It's always a bit of a kind of strange element to it, where he's a bit seedy and not quite sure why he's saying it. But it received mixed. He received mixed response from reviewers because a lot of people or some people thought that he was just too ridiculous as a baddie, especially based on the previous Bond films. And he was a big jump up from the kind of roles that you've seen in those earlier films. And also, as I said, he didn't have a lot of screen time, so his characterisation throughout the film was actually quite strange. He did say that, quite a nice quote, to be an outright villain on a fairly superficial basis, which is the kind of villains required of you in most kinds of movies, is not very difficult. Say you're playing someone like Blofeld, well, you've got everything going for you. You've got your own volcano. You've got James Bond at your mercy. They give you a marvellous pussycat to stroke. And what do you have to do? Just look him straight in the eye, speak with a funny accent, and not blink too often. Then everyone says, what an incredibly sinister man with those funny eyes. So, not bigging himself up there, but suggesting that it's probably easier to play that kind of role because it's quite a simple role. There's not a lot of depth in, especially in the early Bonds, there's not a lot of depth to the baddies, is there? They're just an evil person. Whereas obviously later on they do try and add it in. There's an interesting thing I found out when I was researching this. It's not really specifically to do with Blofeld, but it's to do with his cat. But during the shooting of the finale of the volcano set, apparently the cat was ridiculously scared and it kept running away, and they'd lose it for like days, and it would just be hidden in the rafters of the studio and stuff like that because it was just running away from these explosions. But if you type in to YouTube scared Blofeld cat, there's a scene, and it's in the film, where the cat is literally clawing at Donald Pleasant's arm, trying to get away from him, and his eyes are poking out, like, sideways, trying to get away. And he's just acting and holding this cat in place. When I watched the YouTube video, I thought it was, like, an outtake, but it's the actual scene. So worth having a look at that and just seeing how ridiculous that is. Donald also said that the cat would often dirty his trousers when it was scared. So I couldn't find any videos of that, but... Yeah, sounds certainly always fun to work with animals, isn't it?
What they say, never work with children or animals.
Yeah, but isn't it an interesting character? And definitely, I don't think I've ever thought about who my favourite Blofeld is, really. I don't know if I have one, but yeah, he's definitely the one that
you think
if you were to draw Blofeld.
Yeah,
that's what he looked like.
But he's a cartoon villain in that one, isn't he? It's a very cartoony film, that film, just in general.
Yeah.
You Only Live Twice.
But when you think about it, it was Roald Dahl, wasn't it? He wrote that script, and Roald Dahl was all about the
fantasy, yeah,
the fantasy and the caricatures and the you know,
bring it blood.
Every character he writes has got some sort of physical, obvious thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, there? Yeah.
So yeah, maybe it's Roald Dahl who's caused him. Who knows? So then that takes us on to the next film, On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
So, after You Only Live Twice, the Blofeld characterisation takes a complete left turn. He is a very different character on Her Majesty's Secret Service to how we were used to him in You Only Live Twice. He plays a much more central part in the film, first of all. He's physically in it more. He physically does more. You know, he's in a lot of action sequences, and also he's quite like I don't know how to put this, but he's quite a sexual man in this film as well. He flirts with the women.
He's almost like he's not a counterpart to Bond, but he's definitely a man like Bond.
Yes,
like, yeah. He's not a weirdo, is he?
He's much more cosmopolitan, man of the world, than this weirdo like. Yeah. Head of a secret organisation. So I think they knew that he was going to be in it more for this film, and that's why they chose to recast the part. So Peter Hunt, who was the editor on You Only Live Twice, had been promoted to director for On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And so this is a quote from the book Some Kind of Hero, excellent book, which again I'll be recommending quite a lot. But Peter Hunt said he didn't want Pleasance to return, and this is why. He said, "He's a fine actor, but I wanted someone who could play it more realistically. If you look at him, you never see him move anywhere. I had to cut his movements as he just minced around everywhere."
Sounds accurate, though.
So that's what Peter Hunt said about Donald Pleasance, and that's why they looked to cast someone else, because it was going to be a much more physical part this time around. At this point, Max von Sydow is linked with the role. They did look at Max von Sydow, and he's someone that'll crop up again in a bit. But the actor that they landed on in the end was Telly Savalas. And so he was born Aristoteles Savalas in New York in 1922. By the time he'd come to make Bond, he'd already been nominated for Best Supporting Actor Oscar for the 1962 film Birdman of Alcatraz. And he'd also recently starred with Diana Rigg and Oliver Reed in The Assassination Bureau. And this is where it all comes together. He was a gambling friend of Cubby Broccoli's. He used to play cards with Cubby, basically. Right. So it was going to happen, right? Oliver Reed had been linked with Bond. Diana Rigg was in Bond. So Savalas got the role. And he saw Savalas, as we said, as a cosmopolitan man. So you get the sense that he moulded the role to be like him, basically. And he's very different in this film to how he's been built up so far. And obviously what's interesting about this is the Bond comes face to face with Blofeld and they don't recognise each other. So the continuity is all over the place. Interestingly, the writer of the film, Richard Maybaum, he was not a fan of Telly Savalas. He didn't think he was the right man for the role. And he was campaigning with Peter Hunt to get Savalas to play Blofeld with an accent. You know, he'd written him as Blofeld that we'd seen before. He should have the accent, he should be this. But, you know, Savalas just used his American accent and we get this very different Blofeld. Lazenby, he had a sort of a tenuous relationship with Savalas. In one interview, he said that Savalas saw himself as the star of the film, basically, so that you get a sense that he was the big man on set. And also, he would often invite Lazenby to play cards at the end of the shoot, at the end of each day, because he knew that Lazenby wasn't spending his per diem on set, so he was keeping this $100 he was getting per day to feed himself. He wasn't spending it, so he was like, come play cards. Just kept rinsing him his money. And in the end, Harry Saltzman had to intervene and tell him to stop. It was like, this is my leading man, stop taking him to the cleaners at the gambling table.
Which is it though, at that time Telly Savalas is a pretty famous guy, and
he's an Oscar nominated star, and Lazenby's just a model, isn't he?
Yeah.
And in fact, did he even lie about being a model? I don't even know if he was even a model at that point, but anyway. So obviously in this film, Bond is actually on the hunt for Blofeld. And he tracks him down to Switzerland. And Bond, because the plot is basically Blofeld is trying to claim the title of the Count Balthazar de Blochamp. And so this is where Bond comes in. So he poses as Sir Hilary Bray from the genealogy department. And so he then goes to this clinical allergy research institute in Pisgloria in the Swiss Alps. One of the great Bond locations, if you ask me. And this is where he meets the Angels of Death. And these are the women that Blofeld has recruited. And they're being brainwashed and they're going to distribute this bacterial warfare. Basically, this nerve death stuff around the world. Bond escapes from Pisgloria. Tracy, who is also part of the plot, she gets captured by Blofeld. And so then with the help of Draco, Bond returns to Pisgloria to rescue Tracy. Blofeld escapes. Quite a memorable scene where he escapes on a bobsleigh and gets snared on a tree branch around the neck. Obviously, then the film ends. James Bond goes off, marries Tracy, and then this is it. This is the moment. Blofeld kills his wife, Tracy, his newlywed wife. And obviously, this is the famous, you know, adds to the mystique of Blofeld, I think, and he's standing in the canon. More than Savalas does, it's his actions that really cement his place in the Bond history. Yeah. Reading about On Her Majesty's Secret Service, there was a point during the development of the film when Sean Connery was going to do it that it was going to be revealed that Blofeld was Goldfinger's twin, which is interesting. And then later, obviously in Diamonds Are Forever, the main villain in Diamonds Are Forever was going to be Goldfinger's twin. So this idea recycled again, but Gert Frobe decided he refused to come back to play the villain in Diamonds Are Forever. So then they just replaced the character completely with Blofeld. So this idea of this twin and Goldfinger sort of was percolating.
It does seem a bit messy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit much, isn't it? So like I said, he had a mixed relationship with Lazenby, but Lazenby actually said that there was a moment where they were rehearsing their first scene together and someone had, you know, I think maybe Lazenby had overheard it, but someone had warned Savalas that, you know, that he's not really an actor. You might, you know, he's a novice and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But actually, when they were doing these rehearsals together, actually, Savalas turned around in front of Lazenby to the person who'd said this to him. And he said, he doesn't need any help. I've got to watch out. He's going to blow me off the screen. And Lazenby just said that, you know, that remark just really helped boost his confidence. So actually, you know, yeah. he was quite friendly towards Lazenby. So obviously, that's his involvement in James Bond. He later became famous for playing Kojak in the 1970s TV series. Interestingly, while he was working on the movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Sally met the actress Sally Adams. She's one of Blofeld's Angels of Death. And she was 25 years younger than him, but they actually moved in together and they had a son together. later they stopped living together and she filed a palimony lawsuit against him. So it didn't work out, that one. So he actually had 3 marriages, 6 kids, and this is a good one. He had a celebrity goddaughter, Jennifer Aniston.
No way.
So Telly Savalas was Jennifer Aniston's godfather because he was best friends with her father. So that's interesting.
Well, that's very interesting. Mm. That's definitely going to get brought out at some dinner parties.
Yeah. So he died in 1994, and he died from cancer at the Sheraton Universal Hotel in University City, California, where he'd been living for 20 years. So he'd gone full Alan Partridge and was living in a hotel. And if you go,
there is a bit of the Alan Partridge about Telly Savalas, isn't there?
And so if you go to the Sheraton Universal Hotel in Universal City, the bar there is called Telly's, named after him.
Oh, that's good. Nice.
A couple of other fun facts before I move on, just because I really found this enjoyable looking into it. But he had a number one single in the UK, Telly Savalas. It was a spoken word version of Bread's song If. And it reached number one in 1975.
Yes, I have heard this.
And then in the late 1970s, if you went to the cinema at a certain time, there would be these little mini films that were shown before the films. They were called Telly Savalas Looks at Portsmouth, Telly Savalas Looks at Aberdeen, and Telly Savalas Looks at Birmingham. And so he did the voices over for these little travel films for like these British towns and Scottish towns and. Yeah, apparently there were examples of quota quickies, which were a part of a requirement that cinemas in the UK show a percentage of British produced films. So they just had to fill this quota, and that's how they did it. And Telly Savalas was involved with that.
Wow.
So yeah, he's a very different Blofeld. Very different. It's in one of my favourite Bond films, but probably the least memorable Blofeld. Is that fair?
I always find with Telly Savalas, when you're watching it, he's actually quite engaging character in it, but I think the role that he plays is so far removed from what you expect. He's like, you can't even imagine Donald Pleasance's Blofeld playing that role in on His Majesty's Secret Service. He walks around the building smoking with James Bond, just chatting like normal blokes. He's such a far removed role, and he's very hands-on as well, isn't he? He actually fights Bond. He actually runs around doing stuff, which I don't think works with Blofeld. Blofeld's meant to be like omnipotent. He's
pulling the strings, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it defeats the point. The whole point of Spectre is that it's all these tentacles that are going out and you're controlling things, and he's doing it all himself. He's actually making phone calls and stuff, isn't he? Like, trying to get helicopters and things.
Very weird. Very weird.
Mm. Well, and if it's left field you want.
Go on. When does he pop up next?
He pops up in Diamonds Are Forever, this time played by Charles Grey. So, visually looking very different this time. So, he's got hair, his face shape is completely different, and his personality is slightly different as well. They've tied in the visual, how he looks, in with the story. So, I guess they can get away with that. But the complete sort of abandonment of the original character seems difficult to deal with.
He's a very smarmy man, isn't he?
Yeah, smarmy, and just like you couldn't see Donald Pleasance again. Go back to that. You couldn't see Donald Pleasance playing this in the same scenes as Charles Grey plays in. And the lines, you couldn't put the lines in his mouth either.
No, it's strange, isn't it? They've basically had 3 different Blofelds in very quick succession, and couldn't have been further removed each one of them. None of them are similar to the other ones. Which is a very strange way to do it.
Yeah. So Charles Grey, he was born Donald Marshall Grey. So he appeared in You Only Live Twice as Dick O. Henderson as well, which I'm sure when we get to G, we will cover Charles Grey in more depth. So it's interesting. He's been in 2 Bond films as 2 different characters. He also played Mycroft Holmes in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and the criminologist in The Rocky Horror Picture Show in 1975. So they're 2 of his other big roles. Born in Bournemouth. And went to school with Benny Hill. maybe preparing him to play this version of Blofeld.
Certainly took a few learnings from him.
By the time he got to his mid-20s, he'd been working as an estate agent, but he quit. He left that job to try and become an actor, where he carved out a bit of a career for himself at the Old Vic and at the RSC, received vocal training. and became noted for his imposing presence. And then his breakout year was 1967, so that was the same year You Only Live Twice. It was the Night of the Generals with Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif, which is a murder mystery film set in the Second World War. So that was his breakout. And then, 4 years after his first appearance in a Bond film, he appeared as Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever. So the story is treading similar lines to before. You know, Bond is trying to track down Blofeld. Slightly harder this time, because Blofeld is creating lookalikes with the use of plastic surgery and hot mud bath.
There's definitely a hot mud bath in there. Yeah.
So Bond tracks down these operations to find out, you know, that all these lookalikes are being created. The real Blofeld avoids being caught by Bond, and he goes and takes the place of billionaire Willard White. So again, you know, he'll do anything, you know, Blofeld do anything to hide himself and try and not be caught. And then he starts operating from the hotel penthouse of White, and he sets about trying to construct a laser satellite, which he'll then blackmail the world's governments and try and sell off to the highest bidder. All very Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
So as we go to the end, it's classic. We aim for that crescendo at the end. So Bond escapes capture, obviously. Classic. He finds out the location of the original Willard White and rescues him. And in the meantime, Blofeld is escaping. Abducts Tiffany Case, who is the Bond girl in Diamonds Are Forever. So the CIA attack the rig. There's an oil rig. Blofeld attempts to escape using a midget submarine. And then the sub is crashed. Bond gains the control of the submarine. It then crashes into the control room. Big explosion. Base destroyed. Blofeld dead.
Question mark.
Yes.
But in terms of this, the way it's played, have I imagined that he dresses up in drag?
No, he does dress up in drag.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't remember what point it is, but I've just got it in my head.
Because I imagine him, yeah, in a wig.
Is it because he's trying to escape and that's his disguise?
So, can you imagine Donald Pleasance?
Oh, it's just... I mean, this is the same thing as... Whereas Telly Savalas goes, he's very real and he does stuff and he's just a guy who's working all the time. This Blofeld is, he's similar in a way in that he's very heavily involved with what's going on. Mm. Too involved. He doesn't need to do all this stuff. I don't know why he bothers doing the whole thing with Willard White, where he sits in his office, he pretends to be him by using a voice changer so that people think he's him. Why is he getting involved? Because it's not even him. Anybody could do that. Yeah. So surely that would be one of his agents. I don't know why he gets so involved with this plot. And it's not even like his other plots are way more detailed and enticing than this one. This seems like a strange one for him to get involved with. But I don't know, maybe Spectre's having bad times and it's stripping to staff or something.
I mean, Diamonds Are Forever, the book, has nothing to do with Blofeld, right? So he is being shoehorned in at this stage. But yeah. I mean, the drag, that you're right, the drag scene is kind of ridiculous, and you wonder why Sean Connery didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. It's a strange character. But if you spoke to anybody who wasn't a big Bond fan and you said, "Who is this man?" they wouldn't say that's Blofeld. They wouldn't even remember who he was. Really, at least Telly Savalas has something about him that's interesting. I don't think this Blofeld is. He's just not memorable, is he? That strange persona with the American accent and everything, just very odd.
Yeah. So, is he dead? His sub crashes. Is he dead? Do we see him again?
Well, glad you asked. Because now we come to one of my favourite parts of the whole Bond series. As you will remember, before I talk about this, there was actually a bit of history behind Blofeld earlier on in the series, before For Your Eyes Only. When they were working on The Spy Who Loved Me, there are drafts, supposedly, of The Spy Who Loved Me, where Blofeld was actually meant to be in that script. And the plot, I think there's a section in The Spy Who Loved Me that talks about Tracy.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and there's no real evidence of where, what happened with this concept and or what was going to be done. But there's a lot of people talk about on the internet and in forums and things and articles where originally the plan for Spy Love Me was that Blofeld was going to be Stromberg, and it was going to be a revenge tale where they go back to Blofeld and he gets his revenge for what he did to Tracy. Obviously, it doesn't happen like that, but they still left that. There's still that mention in there, which seems like it might be a kind of leftover bit from an original script, because there's no other reason why you'd throw that in.
Yeah, I guess in 1977, you were looking at 10 years since Thunderball, or 12 years since Thunderball, and so
yeah.
I guess this is where the Kevin McClory situation rears its head, and if they had planned to use him, then maybe they didn't have the legal ramifications, just weren't worth dealing with, and so they flipped.
Yeah,
Blofeld.
There's a definite level of that kind of, is it worth actually going for this? Is it worth winning this court case or trying to win any sort of cause case or legal battle? So that's Spy Love Me. There's no real Blofeld link there. There's just a suggestion that might have happened. But you can imagine that every time they do a Bond film, that crops up. There's ideas like, can we do this? Can we add in these characters? No, we can't. And obviously the whole Spectre thing is crops up constantly. But let's move on a few more years to For Your Eyes Only, where, if you remember the pre-title sequence, it's a very strange pre-title sequence, but also a very interesting one. It's very memorable. It's also really ridiculous. So in this sequence, Roger goes to see the grave of his dead wife, and I think he puts down some flowers and then gets in the MI6 helicopter that's picking him up from the graveyard to take him back wherever he wants to go, presumably because they have endless money and to put behind sending people in helicopters to graveyards and things like that. But as he gets into the helicopter, we see a flash, and there's a man sat in a wheelchair with a cat, and he's got a neck brace on and he's bald, but he's got this strange contraption where it's like especially remote control. He's got remote control helicopter drone system set up, but it's got a lot of screens and buttons on it. It's very convoluted. So Roger Moore gets in there, and then suddenly you hear the voice of, I suppose it's a similar voice to the original Blofeld, actually, that you hear in From Russia with Love and Thunderball. It's quite a deep, slightly, it's not an English accent in there. So you hear that voice, the pilot gets electrocuted, so suddenly it's a remote control helicopter and Blofeld's flying, or whoever this character may be, is suddenly flying Roger Moore around London oil drums and stuff like that around, I don't know where it is in London, but it's just flying him around. Roger realises he's got to get control. He gets out, he climbs around, gets into the front seat. All the time, Blofeld's laughing, just constantly laughing at this amazing thing he's done 10 years after he was almost killed by Roger. I don't know why he's waited so long and why this is his comeback. But the best bit, it's not the best bit, the best bit's coming up, but there, to beat him, there's a massive wire with a tape around it sticking out the wall. So Roger pulls it, gets control back of the helicopter. So really, Blofeld's not doing well, is he? He's really gone from quite high power to really struggling to come up with these concepts and barely even managed to put wires into helicopters and things. So eventually, he takes control of it. Then it just gets more weird, because Blofeld's on top of a roof, so which makes it quite easy for Roger to swoop down, pick up the wheelchair, fly in the sky. Roger then slaps Blofeld on the head, gives him a slap head, kind of tap on the head, and he says, keep your hair on, and then drops him into a big chimney. And all the way down, Blofeld's just going, Bond! It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And there's also no reason, it's no relevance to the rest of the film. Like, the reason they're throwing that in, I looked at some research around why that was in there. And one of the suggestions was that the producers just wanted to show that they could, and they didn't care. They didn't need to put Blofeld in a film, but if they wanted to, they could stick something in. Because there's really no other reason why that exists. It's not poignant. It's not... it's not useful to the plot, and it just kind of like just pops down. But anyway, so that's the scene. John Hollis plays the Blofeld character in that scene. He's quite famous for a lot of roles, largely like sci-fi and stuff. He was in Superman films. He was in the original Casino Royale, Dirty Dozen, Flash Gordon he was in, and he was in The Empire Strikes Back. He plays I can't remember. It's like a, you'll know this, Butler. There's like a bald alien that's got a big Lobot thing. That's it, Lobot. Yeah, so he plays Lobot in that. And yeah, he's not, the voice is actually Robert Raity. I don't know a lot about him. So yeah, there's a lot of callbacks to it. There's the mention of Tracy. On the side of the helicopter is Universal Exports. Obviously, there's Blofeld. There's loads of one-liners in that opening sequence. It's unnecessary. And there's one line which is very strange, and people have like gone on message boards to find out what it actually means. And it's the line where he's flying along, and to get Bond to let him go, he says, "I will buy you a delicatessen with a stainless steel counter," which means nothing to anyone, but apparently it's like, well, there's not really many good explanations of why that's in there. I think there's some sort of gangster thing associated with it. Some people just said a delicatessen with a stainless steel kind of surface is quite expensive. So, but there's definitely no, it seems very odd. But that, if you're as only, if you remember the film, it comes right after Moonraker. And Moonraker is a very silly film. It's a very fantastical film. And there's a certain element, and they do talk about this, even Michael G. Wilson says this, is that if they carried on going down the path of Moonraker, things would just get more outlandish. So we needed to get back to basics. Now, I think they took that too literally by going, we need to put Blofeld in there to remind people of this in a ridiculous way as well. They could have done it in a much smarter way. They could have done an amazing scene, actually. If they were going to pretend that Blofeld come back in a scene without actually using him, like, is a character, you could have done some really clever stuff and really made people think about it. Director John Glenn just said about the villain not being able to call him Blofeld, "We just let people use their imaginations and draw their own conclusions. It's a legal thing." So you can kind of see that they know what they're doing. They were probably trying to goad Kevin, weren't they? And because that was like the peaks of that kind of legal battle, and they couldn't really use it. But aside from that, there was actually Eon disputed McClory's ownership of the Blofeld character, but decided not to use the character again. Some people said the scene was a deliberate statement by Broccoli of his lack of need to use that character. So it seems like that, I can't think of any other reason why you put that in there apart from just to annoy someone or mess about.
I have to confess, but I really like the scene.
Really? Why do you like the scene?
I think because it doesn't take itself seriously, and I think also because you don't see Blofeld, you've got that makes a return of not seeing Blofeld. And I know it's silly, but it also knows it's silly itself. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's Roger, isn't it? I like it. I think it goes down. I always remember it. Mm. It's a very important scene, and I think I've often discussed it with people at that scene. But I tell you, that Blofeld is just ridiculous. He's just like a shouting madman. What he's doing is serves no purpose. He could have just blew him up. He'd already been in the helicopter to put the wire in.
Put a bomb in.
Just put a bomb in there. You solved. Yeah. But instead,
he wanted to put the override in there.
I don't know.
That function shouldn't even be in there.
I've got so many questions about it, but I don't know why he's still got a neck brace on as well. It's like, it's 10 years ago when... Why is he waiting? Is it taking that long? And he's still not better, but he's going, I can't wait any longer. I've got to get this helicopter done. And he hasn't got any staff around him either. He must have done it. He must have...
It must have taken him hours.
When's James going to the cemetery? Because I've got to get down there. I've got to get in the helicopter. I'm in a neck brace. So yeah, that's the scene. It doesn't serve any real purpose. That is the last time we see Blofeld in a guise in the original canon film series, and there is no mention of that any time throughout the rest of that canon. So that takes us on to something that isn't canon. Never Say Never Again.
Yeah, so I guess the timeline here is quite interesting. So you're talking about For Your Eyes Only, which was 1981, and 1983 is when Never Say Never Again is released. And so this is Kevin McClory striking again after his legal battle with Fleming in 1965. He was allowed to wait 10 years. I don't want to go too in-depth on this because we'll save it for the Kevin McClory episode, but basically McClory announced a new James Bond film in 1976. and this was going to be a different take on Bond, blah, blah, blah. And so his inclusion in For Your Eyes Only in 1981 is right in the midst of this. The Broccolis know there's an alternative Bond film out there. They know Blofeld could be part of this. And so I feel like that's a huge reason for why they've put that stupid scene in there, you know, just to discredit the character completely, basically. So for this film, which is not considered canon, but we'll talk about it anyway, when it was originally announced, Orson Welles was lined up to play Blofeld. Why that fell apart, I'm not sure, but yeah, he was linked with it. And actually, from what I understand, it was Sean Connery who really pushed to get to cast this film, Never Say Never Again, because he was like, you know, he'd helped co-write the script and, you know, he was instrumental to getting this film made. But he was very keen to make this film. He said that the older Bond films never had depth to their cast, in that, you know, he was the lead character actor and then they just cast a load of, you know, nobodies in the other roles, which to a certain extent is fair, but so he really wanted to cast this film like to the hilt with really great actors. And the person that, you know, he suggested should play Blofeld is Max von Sydow, who is the you know, the very famous Swedish actor. Von Sydow had actually been approached by Cubby and Harry to play Dr. No, but he just turned that offer down. Talking in a later interview, he said, "I was offered Dr. No, yes, and I turned it down. Do I regret it? No, I don't. Well, of course, I didn't know what James Bond was at the time, and of course, I didn't know what was going to happen in the future. But then many years after, I was offered to be in Never Say Never Again." And actually, it's a very much a cameo role in Never Say Never Again. He only plays a very small part. He looks very different. He's much more, as you read about him in the books, a much more urbane character. You know, European, he's got the goatee beard. And one thing that he carries over from the Eon films is the cat. That's like something that they managed to carry over from the other way rather than, you know, it being something completely new. So Von Sydow is in that film. I mean, we could talk about a lot about him, but there's not much to say really. But the plot of Never Say Never Again is based on Thunderball because it's based on the same original script. There's missiles, there's Blofeld holding the world to, and Spectre holding the world to ransom, and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so Von Sydow has only a very small sort of, you know, small part to play in that film. But Connery was a fan, and yeah, and in the end, Blofeld, his fate is uncertain at this point. At the end of the film, Largo gets killed, but Blofeld, he's submerged. And yeah, could return another day. Obviously, he's never returned another day because at this stage, you know, the McClory thing basically ends here, and then ends again when McClory dies and his estate sells the rights to Thunderball to the Broccolis, and that opens the door for him to return many years later. Mm. But anyway, Max von Sydow, yeah, he died earlier in 2020 at the age of 90.
He's not a very memorable. I mean, there's not many characters in Never Say Never Again who are memorable. It's probably actually kind of partly because of what Sean was trying to do, where he wanted to get these great actors in, but they're not really caricatures, they're quite real, the characters, and Max von Sydow is a real Blofeld, but because of that he's not very interesting. He's just like another character that's got a, you know, he's got a plan that he wants to do, but he's not a caricature in any way. He's a bit dull.
Yeah, I mean, von Sydow, we could talk about for hours. You know, he had a huge back catalogue. You know, The Exorcist, the films he made with Ingmar Bergman, and you know, later on Star Wars, just a huge back catalogue, great actor, and worth checking out if you're not really familiar with his work. Very worth delving into his time. So yeah, so we never heard from Blofeld ever again, I mean, in the canon or non-canon, until
we reach November 2013, where the whole dispute between the McClory family and MGM is put to bed, and the copyright all lies with MGM. So then they decide to make Blofeld reappear in Spectre, and this time played by Christoph Waltz. But to go with the whole reboot of the character, this is a Blofeld with a new background, new backstory, and new motives. Played by Christoph Waltz, who is a German-Austrian actor, probably best known from his breakout with the Tarantino movies, Inglourious Basterds specifically, and
Django Unchained,
which he won Academy Awards for Best Supporting Actor for
both pictures.
Yeah, So that's how he's became sort of known in the mainstream. Born in Vienna, and I'm sure we'll cover him when we get to W, because he's been in more than one, I would imagine. So
I imagine we will do, yeah.
Yeah.
He hasn't yet.
No, he hasn't yet. No, once it's released. So he's born in Vienna to a German set designer and an Austrian costume designer. So he's got quite a theatrical background. So this version of Blofeld is different. You know, it's not much left of the old backstory. Born Franz Oberhauser, so he's the son of an Austrian climbing and skiing instructor, Hans Oberhauser, and the wife who is unnamed. Hans is given temporary custody over a 12-year-old British orphan called James Bond, following the death of his parents in a climbing accident. So over these 2 years, he teaches the boy to ski, climb, hunt, you know, quite a few of the skills that he has required to become Bond.
Horse riding?
Don't mention horses. Not again. So Franz becomes jealous of this relationship because they've created such a bond.
Pun intended.
I jumped in there. Pun intended.
I'll edit that one out.
And this obsession, this just, it snowballs and rolls further forward.
Pun intended.
And Franz murders his father in a staged avalanche. So he's also actually assumed killed himself. But he adopts his mother's maiden name and then styles himself as Ernst Stavro Blofeld. This is spoilers, by the way, if you've not seen Spectre, by the way. Just should have said that first. Spoilers.
I can't imagine there's going to be many people listening to this podcast who are going to listen to an hour and a half of us listening about Bond and they haven't watched all the Bond films.
That's true. So, yeah, because we first meet... And let me get the timeline here. So he meets Franz Oberhauser when he goes to visit Spectre. They've got a big meeting of everybody who's involved with Spectre, and Bond is there, and he basically explains to him that he's the author of all his pain over the last three films, the three previous films. So anyone who's been involved, so you've got Le Chiffre, Dominic Green, Silver from the previous three films, they're all apparently, you know, been working for Oberhauser this whole time.
I think I've made my feelings about this very clear on numerous occasions.
So yeah, this is basically, he wants to get back at Bond and kill Bond. So at the end of the film, Bond has got Blofeld at gunpoint on the bridge. I won't go into how we got here because I'm sure we're going to cover Spectre and Christoph Waltz, and there'll be plenty more opportunity to talk about this. But we reach this end point and Bond doesn't take the shot, basically. And this means that Oberhauser, Blofeld, is then taken into MI6 custody.
He's got the scar by now, right?
He's got the scar due to an explosion. Yeah. So, yeah, he's got the Donald Pleasance scar, which, again, like, they've just picked one thing from the previous Blofelds, haven't they? They've got the name and the scar.
Yeah.
And done away with everything else.
I mean, by rights, what they should be doing is, when he's in the next film, cast a much larger Spanish person to come on and play a completely different character.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, obviously, then moving forward into the next film, No Time to Die, Christoph Waltz is in the cast, and the director, Cary Fukunaga, said Blofeld was an iconic character in all the Bond films. He's in prison, but he certainly can't be done yet, right?
Yeah, interesting.
So what we could be doing from there, and what nefarious sadistic things does he have planned from Bond and the rest of the world? So you would imagine he's pulling strings, and we can only speculate now because obviously the film's not yet released. But he's an evil genius, isn't he? So
you don't put Blofeld in the film and not have him pulling the strings, right?
No, exactly. And if you do put him in the film and not have him pulling the strings, it undermines him, and there's no point in having him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could prove quite difficult, depending on which route they go down, really.
Yeah, you'd hope it'd be like sort of a Sherlock-style twist where, even though there's a baddie in it, he's actually pulling the strings. But, yeah. I mean, I'm not holding my breath on that. I don't want to get my hopes up on that because We'll get into this in more depth when we talk about Spectre, but I already had my hopes dashed on Spectre when it came okay. to Blofeld.
Well, it's interesting when they announced that film is that he was announced as Oberhauser, right? And they did the whole press rounds and he had to deny he was Blofeld at every turn.
Yeah, and then Sam Mendes was denying it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it was in the Daily Mail, I think, that revealed the secret from set and you know, spoiled it for everyone. And it could have been maintained, but...
Could it? Could it have? I mean, it was...
I just don't see why. Obviously, they've got the rights to do Spectre. They've got the rights to do Blofeld. And obviously, they've jumped on them as quickly as possible. But this isn't just about Blofeld. This is about the series, but... It would have been so nice if they didn't use it until they start the next canon and then do it properly instead of get it in. Because the problem is, you've got the fan service, you've got the people who love Bond and they're going, oh, wow, Spectre's in it and Blofeld's back. But a large audience that are watching Bond now in the new films don't care. They're not really that bothered about that character. So it would have been much better to kind of carry on with the storyline as it had been instead of shoving in this Blofeld character. And that's why I'm not a fan of this Blofeld. I think he's in the history of the Blofelds, he is quite a confusing character. He doesn't really fit in with what's going on, and there's just too much information about him. You don't need that much information on Blofeld. He's an evil man. He just wants to get Bond. He wants money. He's not some half brother who's
the one that just seems like
it's too complicated, because you could probably go back to that film and go, well, hold on, why are these things happening? Because you've got too much information, whereas with Charles Grey you're not questioning his backstory and going, this doesn't fit. You're just saying, why is he taller and fatter than
dressed
the previous
as a woman?
One why is he dressed as a woman? I mean I'm hoping that's going to happen in No Time to Die. I'd really like them to do drag again for Blofeld. But yeah, definitely for me, he's a strange Blofeld, and I'd be interested to see how the next canon of Bond uses him, or if they do. It just seems like a cheap shot.
I think they're right. The thing with Eon is they always say, you know, we want to make the best film that we can at this available opportunity at this moment. So they will put everything they have into the movie, the next movie that they make. And that obviously then makes it difficult to lay seeds that then get paid off later on. Like when you look at something like the MCU, you know, they could tease Thanos for, what was it, 20 films before they did anything massive with him. And that's kind of what you want. That's the kind of level that you want Blofeld to be at. But in fact, I just don't think he ever reaches that. For me, his history is just so checkered and so spotty that...
Yeah, and it shouldn't be to do with his history. It should be just to do with his actions. And if you imagine the whole Daniel Craig saga had started with them planning the whole saga from day one. So when he says that, I did those things, and then he gives you a bit more information and says, I did this specific thing, and you go back and watch the film, and you go, I did do that.
Exactly.
I wondered why it happened, and you've... And it would suddenly be like all the dots would be fit. But now you look at it and go, well, hold on. At no point did Silver have any dealings with anyone. What were you doing?
No.
Sending him texts?
Yeah.
Asking him how it was going?
It was literally him just going,
those baddies as well.
Yeah, exactly. You go, last three films, it wasn't them. That was me. Okay.
It sort of undermines
that. What were you doing then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll save that for... That's more of a review of... The Spectre script than Blofeld, but I think in terms of Blofeld, I think he's a very strange Blofeld in the series and not one that I was a fan.
I think Christoph Waltz is a great actor. He's one of the great actors working
he's
today.
Fantastic.
So they've got the right man for it, but we'll see. In No Time to Die, we'll see whether he'll be remembered for being a great Blofeld.
Just on that, it might not have been him. There's two others. I scoured the internet to find if there's any other potential castings, and I could find Chiwetel Ejiofor. Yeah. He was a possible one. And then in a leaked Sony email, Meryl Streep, she was only merely mentioned, just names, like, because they wanted to do it. They thought, oh, we could do it.
Because of her sterling work on Mamma Mia.
They could do a female Blofeld, and one of the producers went, it'd be ridiculous unless it was Meryl Streep. So
you could, it's completely feasible, and it's probably could work quite well. It's just you'd have to do it well, and definitely. You couldn't have just shoved it in instantly. It's got to have a reason that you've done that.
Yeah.
So there we go.
What else is there to say about Blofeld?
Well, I mean, it's funny. We've spoken about Blofeld quite a bit actually, but really, in terms of the character and stuff, there's not a lot to Blofeld really. One of the things that he has obviously appeared in is video games. And there's been a lot of Bond video games over the years, right from the 80s, from, you know, really old consoles. But I was kind of researching what computer games he'd been in. And for the most part, if you think about it, a lot of the Bond films are like stuck in this legal discussion where they can't use Blofeld and they can't use Spectre. And all of those early games would have come out in the 80s and early 90s, so he doesn't really appear in any old Bond games. There's no kind of platformers that Blofeld's in, and also he's not the kind. If you think about old platform games, they tend to just be a big baddie that you fight and shoot, and it's always probably Jaws or, you know, one of the other big Odd Job, something like that. Actually, I don't think the computer games really, it would have been Tim Dalton running a computer game time and a couple of Roger Moores. But he did appear in some computer games, specifically two computer games over the past 10 years. And interestingly, these computer games were during the time where they didn't have the legal rights to do it, or they weren't doing Spectre and Blofeld in the films. So first one he was in was GoldenEye Rogue Agent. Now, I haven't played this. Brendan, you've played this, haven't you?
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah, the premise behind these actually sounds quite interesting. I would say I'd go and get them, but I think they'd be so awful now, it probably wouldn't be worth trying them out. But the idea behind GoldenEye Rogue Agent, it came out in 2004. It's a first-person shooter. Obviously, every Bond game that came out after GoldenEye was a first-person shooter, wasn't it, to try and tap into that money that they got from the original one. And they never quite did the same. This was Electronic Arts, so it wasn't made by Rare, who did GoldenEye, so it wasn't very similar to it. The way it played and stuff like that just wasn't anywhere near as good. But the idea behind this is that Blofeld, or Number One, he's only called Number One in it, he's not called Blofeld, he manipulates an underworld feud between its two most influential members, Dr. No and Goldfinger, with the goal of having them ultimately destroy one another. He is assisted in this scheme by the organisation's technology pipeline, Francisco Saramanga, who engineers the construction of GoldenEye's eponymous golden-hued cybernetic eye. So it's quite a confusing concept. And I couldn't be bothered to go into any more detail about what happened in this game. But you can see they've just kind of shoved in as many characters as they can into a strange non-canon storyline. And then the other game that came out, which I haven't played either, 007 Legends. Have you played this one, Brendan?
No.
So this is actually quite an interesting concept. It came out just before Skyfall was released. And it's going to coincide with the 50th anniversary of James Bond. And the idea is that it follows six different James Bonds, and each part of the game is one of their films. So you play a bit of Moonraker, you play a bit of Unimagic Service, you play a bit of Goldfinger, License to Kill, Die Another Day. And Skyfall was released a week before as downloadable content before the film itself was released. And it's all set in this kind of weird realm of your Daniel Craig looking back on all... You play it as Daniel Craig, you play all the missions as Daniel Craig, but going back to the older, you know, sets and stuff like that it was in. Sounds good. Concept sounds quite interesting. It's, again, obviously not canon. It's just random nonsense from, you know, they're just throwing bits and pieces together to cash in with the release of Skyfall. Looks quite good, though. The only other time... So Blofeld was in that. Again, I doubt he was called Blofeld in it. And there's also GoldenEye 007 for the Wii. Did anybody ever play GoldenEye on the Wii?
I'm sure we played it together, me and you.
Oh, maybe. But I completely forgot about it. So I did a bit of research into the game itself and watched a few clips of it earlier. And it's not GoldenEye. It's like it's just called GoldenEye.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a similar. Obviously, it's first person, but that's it really. But interestingly, Blofeld is a playable multiplayer character in this game. He was never in GoldenEye, the original GoldenEye. And the likeness was Charles Gray, which seems quite strange.
In drag.
Go for that option.
In drag.
Imagine they were sat in a meeting going, right, okay, which character are you going to have? Blofeld. Yeah, okay, we've got him, got the scar on his face. Whoa! Not that one. Charles Gray. Really? Okay. So, yeah, he's in that one. I'm not going to go into any more depth of that because I don't really want to research any more about GoldenEye 007 on the Wii. But I couldn't find any other games that he'd been in.
Do you think he'll be in Project 007, the upcoming game?
Yeah. Yes,
I think
definitely.
That's a good chance. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I'm very excited about this game.
Yeah, it depends on if they're doing the Origins though. They might just carve a whole new thing and save Blofeld for later. I think for sequels, we'll see.
Yeah. I reckon they're not going to miss that chance, even if it's a game, isn't it? So they're not going to miss the chance to chuck in some
Charles Gray
iconics,
Easter egg type things, or it'll be multiplayer as well, won't it? So I imagine there'll be something in there. It'll be Charles Gray, hopefully.
yeah. Or he'll be downloadable, maybe unlockable.
He'll be downloadable after his sterling work in GoldenEye 007 on the Wii, which I'll be ordering tomorrow. So that's it for games, really. But if you think about it, he's not really a game character, is he? He doesn't do a lot, unless he was Telly Savalas, who does actually run around and shoot. But
yeah,
he can only at best be a voice and head honcho.
Just a slight footnote before we sort of wrap things up, but Blofeld had a daughter in the John Gardner books that came after the Ian Fleming books. I don't know if you discovered this while doing your research, but her name was Nina Bismacher.
With a French prostitute.
Yeah. She appears in the book for Special Services, which was released in 1982. But yeah, interesting that they were able to get around the McClory thing. But yeah, that's the only sort of other sort of addendum to add, really. But I guess his impact in Bond is spotty at best. But he lives on through homages in other medium, I think.
Yeah, he's definitely...
There's lots, isn't there?
He encapsulates that Bond formula that most people would think Bond is. Bond is a resourceful, solo guy who's going against a big regime that he has to tackle alone, with his own ingenuity. And the baddie is someone who's got endless resources, endless guns and all this stuff, money, and Bond has to beat him. So he fits that kind of standard archetype of a baddie, but... It's a lazy baddie, isn't it? And as we said earlier, like Spy Love Me and Drax in Moonraker, that's the same thing. It's a rich baddie that's got a massive plan. Bond's on his own. He's got to beat him. But for me, he's not the best baddie format. Goldfinger is, or where it's a little bit more. Or I suppose to an extent, Telly Savalas is hits that role to an extent where he's really Bond is challenged by a human as opposed to challenged by a rich regime of an army.
Faceless regime, yeah. It's a tricky one.
I think they're the films where Bond comes out. That's where he's really, you know, you really delve deeper into the character and he does his best work.
I think he's best when he's hinted at. I think, you know, the From Russia with Love mould. I think that's for me is what you want from Blofeld, a mysterious figure pulling the strings.
That's what most things have sort of done homage to, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's that.
Yeah.
And it's when it gets bigger that's when it passes over into parody, when it becomes the Dr. Evil in Austin Powers. And that's...
But you do need that. The Bond series did need that, didn't it? Because that probably... A certain audience probably wouldn't like Goldfinger because it is so... It's like mano a mano. Younger generation probably never enjoyed that. Like, they just like the massive set pieces and the, you know, Little Nelly and all that stuff. So that kind of Roald Dahl style, big baddie, big set pieces, weird fantasies. It's definitely played a part in it, but I don't know, it's preference really, isn't it? Some people might say Blofeld is the best character in Bond. Be worth listening to. If you're listening to this and you love Blofeld and you think we're barking up the wrong tree, let us know and why.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, if you ever want to get in touch with us, you can get us on the on bondatozpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to correct us on something, set us straight on Blofeld or add some more detail or share any information, you can email us on that anytime. But yeah, I guess thanks. Time to wrap things up and say thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for persevering. Well done.
Yeah, that was a long one. We didn't plan that to be that long, but I suppose there's a lot of discussion points around characters like Blofeld. Not so much the information that's difficult, but just working out what you think about them. And yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well.
On our next episode, we'll be delving further into the letter B. We're still on the letter B, so it's still a long way to go. But please like and subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. Leave us a review, whatever you think. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Speak soon.
Bye. Bye.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy, and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingemels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.